Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the first ever Tilehurst End live stream. We thought we'd wheel it out for a special occasion. We had it all ready to go last week when we thought Veljko Paunović was going to be relieved of his duties. He managed to stay in his job, but for less than a week, as, of course, it was confirmed yesterday, just half an hour after Reading beat Preston, that Veljko Paunović was no longer the Reading manager. So we thought we'd pop on here and to discuss all of Paunović's tenure, the last crazy 24 hours, the last crazy week, and also what happens next going forward with Paul Ince and Michael Gilkes as interim bosses. To join me to go through this madness of what has happened over the last week, 24 hours, I'm joined, delighted to be joined by Ben Thomas of Youth and Adulting Writer.
Hey guys, you're all right? How's it going, everybody? Hope you're all well today. And a little bit of better news with the win. And obviously the chaos behind the scenes continues, and we'll get into that in just a moment, I guess. But yeah, good to be here. Thank you, Ollie.
And Benji Newick, the Reading Chronicle reporter, making his TTE debut. How's it going, Benji?
Good. Pleasure to be here. Always good to chat. There's always stuff to talk about.
We were saying off air that Benji's almost like the Reading fans therapist at the moment with his Twitter spaces and trying to make sense of everything that's happened over the last 24 hours and a week. We'll get straight into it then. And Ben, we spoke on the podcast Thursday night, looking ahead to this Preston game. And it very much felt like it was just going to be Groundhog Day, that Reading were going to lose again. There was going to be huge uproar from supporters. Veljko Paunović was going to stay as manager, and the cycle would just keep on going. None of that happened yesterday afternoon. Reading finally won a game for the first time since the end of November. Their first win in 13 matches in all competitions. And in half an hour after the game was announced, Veljko Paunović would be leaving his position. What were your immediate thoughts on that, Ben?
Well, the game itself, I mean, you know, huge shock. It was, I haven't listened to the podcast, you know, the situation with where we were at leading up to the game was pretty tragic, really. You know, we were struggling for positives on that podcast. You know, so to get a win was the most important thing. You know, when you're back to 3-2, you kind of, the demons set in a little bit, and you could just see, you know, potentially a collapse in terms of us getting the 3 points, but luckily managed to hold out. And full credit to the team for getting that 3 points. Full credit to everyone going up there in the appalling conditions weather-wise, and they were rewarded with, you know, first 3 points in quite a few months. So great result, really, in terms of heading into the game. You know, the form of both teams couldn't have been any different. And then obviously to hear the news of Paunović going was not, you know, unexpected. I think we need to make that really clear. I don't think there was anyone really that expected him to last until the end of the season, the way things were going. But I think the manner in which it was announced and kind of the immediate nature of the aftermath of the game was very odd. You know, I know we're going to talk about Paul Ince separately later on, but it feels at the moment, you know, a little bit more optimistic from my point of view in terms of heading into Tuesday, and then obviously the game coming next Saturday as well. So, you know, we've got, as a fan base, I say we've got what we wanted, but it gives us an opportunity to move forward now. It's very difficult for Paul Ince to come in after the team have just won after the first time in a long time. But, you know, we've got a situation where we can move on and build, and the players need to believe now that they can pick up results. You know, they played as a team for the first time in a long time yesterday, and that's great. So hopefully we can build on that, get another 3 points on Tuesday, and then continue to sort of, you know, solidify that fourth from bottom spot and maybe move up the table a little bit more. But very, very pleased with the 3 points, and you can't criticise the team for that whatsoever. So very, very pleased that we've been able to get on the board there.
Benji, it was sort of made clear by Dion Pang in a statement that this was a decision to sack Veljko Paunović or to leave by mutual consent is the go-to phrase nowadays. But it was clear that this was a decision made on Friday morning by the sounds of it. And Veljko Paunović said that he'd been told before the game that it was happening. Do you think the players had any idea what was the sort of timeline of this? Because as I say, there was these huge murmurings last weekend that it seemed it was going to be destined to happen on Sunday night or Monday morning. It didn't happen. Why now, after this Peterborough draw and before the Coventry game?
Yeah, it's obviously a very strange situation all around. And I think the timeline goes back quite a lot further than this week. I believe Paunovic offered his resignation as much as about 4 weeks ago now. And it was rejected at the time. And then things have kind of gotten worse and worse. Concerns sort of, I know Paunovic and the people around him were starting to grow more and more concerned about just the level of negativity and toxicity that he was taking, which is obviously, you know, a shame to have a human be sort of affected so much by what's going on around him and by the, I guess, criticism that he's getting, even if it is valid criticism and this is football where it's going to happen. But I think things were just getting to a point where he and the people around him felt that it just wasn't a sort of an environment where he could continue. And so I do think, you know, we hear mutual consent a lot, and it almost is never true. It almost is always that they've been sacked. But I do get the impression that this was much more sort of, whether it was all his choice or a joint decision, I do get the impression that it was a lot more sort of his choice as well as being the club's choice. And I think the decision was made, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, and I haven't been able to confirm this yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if the decision was made as much as a week ago when sort of that news was first breaking. But then they had a delay, whether it was due to trying to find the next manager, whether it was due to having to deal with the EFL, because pretty much everything Reading does has to go through the EFL now. And then obviously, I think on Friday morning, it was confirmed between Paunovic and the hierarchy. And I've been told again and again this morning and last night that the players didn't know. I mean, obviously, we either can choose to believe that or choose not to believe that. There was obviously a performance on the pitch that energy levels seemed completely different to what we've seen in recent weeks. And obviously, one of the players is the son of the person who's now come in to take charge. So again, we can choose to believe that or not choose to believe that. Speaking to Lucas Zhao after the game, he did seem genuinely sort of in shock. You know, he seemed kind of lost for words, and it seemed like a very genuine reaction to me. But once again, it would be very easy to believe that some of the players at least did know, but also everyone is saying that they didn't know. So it's hard to say for certain on that level.
Yeah, I mean, I think as with anything we've read in the last couple of years, it's almost impossible to know exactly what is 100% fact. And I do struggle to believe, because in the fact that Paul Ince is coming in, he's going to have told his son that, I mean, because this clearly isn't a snap decision. He's clearly told Tom Ince, and either Tom Ince can keep a secret very, very well, or Lucas Zhao's got a very good poker face. So I'm sure there are things to come out the next couple of days. Ben, I think everyone has been in agreement for weeks now that this is a decision that has needed to come for a long, long time, and this decision yesterday was long overdue. At what point did you sort of become panel out? Because there was sort of rumblings and sort of some discontent towards the end of last season when Reading, you know, just collapsed basically from a great position in the top six to then finish seventh. Didn't start the season too well, obviously, with the transfer embargo and injury, stuff like that. Some discontent there. But for a large while, there was sort of sympathy for Paunovic and sort of mitigating circumstances that sort of kept him in the job. But I think the last month or so, particularly this sort of run of seven straight defeats, the Kidderminster game, the record defeat to Fulham, has sort of just flipped the entire fan base, hashtag panel out, essentially. At what point did you sort of become convinced that the Reading had no future under Veljko Paunovic?
Probably the Luton game, if I'm honest, the Luton home game, because, you know, you could look at the Kidderminster game as kind of the catalyst for a lot of the ill feeling towards him. You know, we hadn't won sort of a month prior to that, you know, going back to the Swansea away game, the 3-2 win that we picked up there. But I felt at that point, you know, although Kidderminster was a really disappointing result, I felt like he might have had enough in the locker and the players might have been a little bit more proactive to be able to push on and get results. But, you know, after the Kidderminster game, you know, the Fulham hammering, obviously, you know, they were in Middlesbrough and you know, we were told that we were all going to come back and everything was going to be fine and the team were going to perform and, you know, we were going to go harder and all that sort of stuff. And then the Luton game was just abject. It was, you know, probably one of the worst games I'd seen of the season at that point. And I just felt then that you know, his time was up. Coupled with the kind of the increasingly strained relationship he had with the local media, you know, the interviews that he gave and the kind of the blaming of everything else around him, really. And we've seen it before time and again. You know, people have always quoted the Brendan Rodgers situation with Tim Deller, but that was the beginning of the end as well. Obviously, the club was in a different mindset, a different era then. But, you know, once you start to find and you blame kind of other reasons for stuff happening on the pitch, that's not a good look. From a manager's point of view. So I felt then he wasn't really deflecting some of the issues that the club had. And for me, the Luton game was the point where I probably thought, that's it, you know, it's game over. He's not going to come back from this. And that the squad of players probably were going to continue to spiral. And so it proved until yesterday. So, you know, it's a shame. I've always been very vocal about the fact I wanted it to work for him. You know, we've spoken time and again on the podcast, Ollie, and in articles about how we wanted it to work, but it just wasn't happening. And it's all got, you know, very messy, very, very quickly. And I stand by the point, the most important thing right now is that Reading Football Club stay in the Championship, because if we get relegated, you know, we're not an attractive proposition to players coming in at the moment anyway, but we get relegated to League One and we are going to be one of the last dogs at the bowl for players coming in. So we have to stay up. And quite frankly, as I've said in previous weeks, I don't care who manages the team now. We've got enough on paper individually to be able to stay in that league. The players proved that they can play. They did that yesterday against a very good, well-organised Preston side. And they've got to show that and continue to get points on the board now.
It's interesting you mentioned the local press there. So we have a esteemed member of the Reading local press with us. And there does seem to be a recurring theme that once a manager falls out with Tim Deller, it is almost the beginning of the end. As you mentioned, Brendan Rodgers, I think Brian McDermott had a bizarre argument with him at Middlesbrough away. In 2016 as well. Benji, obviously you came to start covering the club in November. What obviously, I think it was your second win, was it, yesterday? I think the Preston win, which was remarkable, which tells you how bad Reading have been. But how have you found sort of Panovich to deal with in sort of interviews and sort of exchanges and stuff like that?
Yeah, no, it's a good question, because obviously, you know, Panovich, I'm trying to figure out, I guess, the best ways of saying this, but Panovich, I think, is one of the best managers I've dealt with in terms of speaking to the media and the amount of time he's willing to give and sort of the depth he's willing to go into on certain answers, especially in the pre-match press conferences, where he's frequently given us 35 minutes at the training ground, which is not something I've seen from any other manager I've dealt with. But things did get really tough in terms of the relationship, because at some point, when as a journalist, you have to start asking certain questions, and you understand that the manager isn't going to want to, or even isn't going to be able to answer those questions, but you just have to ask them, because these are questions that need answering and buttons that need pressing. And unfortunately, the manager in this case is the only one who's there to answer questions. So he has to be the one to take the questions. I mean, there was a press conference probably a month now where we were asking him about the relationship with Kia Jarabchin, and those shouldn't be questions he should answer. And he said pretty much that he couldn't answer them, but it wasn't the same sort of no comment as we saw after Peterborough, which it was just like, I'm not going to answer questions about my future. It was more like a frustrated, almost understanding that he doesn't have the answers and he wants to kind of be able to offer more insight, but he just can't. And it was, I think, a tough presser for everyone, because we obviously wanted to chase answers that fans should know, but he, I guess, felt he just couldn't answer them. And there's a process, I think, when a manager starts to struggle or when he starts to get under pressure, where at some point results get bad, we can all sort of feel the tide turning. And so you start asking questions about their future, about the process of what his relationship is like with the owners, etc. And normally, if results don't turn around pretty quickly, the end comes for that manager quite soon after. So you don't end up asking those questions for more than a couple of weeks, because you've only started asking them close to the end. But the reality of this bizarre situation is that it dragged on for 6 weeks or whatever. So those questions started being asked every single week for over a month. And that was just a ridiculous situation for him and I guess for the journalists as well, because he shouldn't have to continue answering questions about his future every single week, because at some point he should be put out of his misery. And if he's offered his resignation a month ago or whatever it was, then he recognizes that as well, that at some point this should have ended a lot sooner. And so the situation got way more toxic and way more difficult than it needed to be, because everyone, including himself, realized that it should have ended a long time ago. And so it's really dragged on. It's obviously costed the team points, I think. It's costed sort of the whole environment has gotten more and more toxic. Ironic, I guess, that eventually it did end after the first win in 84 days. But yeah, it's been a bit of a difficult relationship. I have to credit Paunovic for the way he sort of dealt with the media, because I do think he was very generous with sort of his time and energy. But obviously, I can totally understand how things got more and more difficult for him, and he started having to answer questions that he didn't want to answer. And I find it hard to blame him for that, even though I can understand fans' frustration in feeling, I don't know if he was slightly arrogant when answering some questions. I know that's been leveled at him, and I'm not saying that isn't true, but I think it's just a very difficult situation for the manager to deal with. And I think that was kind of the effect of some of his less inspirational answers that we were seeing down the stretch, I guess.
Ben, how much do you think these interviews have sort of contributed towards this sort of fractious relationship with supporters that has formed? Because, you know, naturally results on the pitch are going to determine the mood, and fans are going to be delighted if we win a game. But ultimately, as Benji says, he's been asked the same questions week after week, and ultimately he can only give so many answers. And there has been a perception that, yes, while results are contributed towards his downfall, his sort of manner and his, I don't want to say arrogance, because it might be something lost in translation or whatever, but has the way he's come across interviews, do you think, contributed towards his sort of animosity that has begun between fans and Berko Paunovic?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see the arrogance that other people maybe see. What I look at is a guy that's under incredible pressure, because, you know, he's been left, you know, hung out to dry by people above him, basically. And that's very difficult. But if the club aren't prepared to stick anyone else out to talk and communicate and share what's going on, and the one person that does, it's just the way of the world. They're going to cop the flak. And I'm not saying that that's right or wrong, but people have wanted answers for a long time. And you know, fans will always say it's this season. We all know it's not this season. We all know it's been building up for two, maybe three seasons. You know, last year was a blip. We didn't, as I said in my article that I did yesterday, I don't think we ever really knew Paunovic, because of, you know, we were out of games. We weren't allowed to attend games because of the lockdown. But, you know, he was a man under immense pressure, and he was being asked legitimate questions that should be answered really by the CEO, by the owner, by the board. And he was having to do that. And, you know, around the end of the summer transfer window, we were led to believe that he was doing all the negotiations there as well. And that's not right, because actually, as a manager's role, yeah, of course you can have a chat with players and you know, walk around the training ground and facilities and stuff, but actually it's not your job to negotiate the transfer and get him in. And that's what we were led to believe was happening. So he kind of, you know, certainly from me, he had a lot of sympathy, and up until, as I said, around the Christmas period, and then the wheels came off it. And I think, you know, the more stress people get, they kind of act in different ways. You know, the anger shows, probably the personal qualities aren't there that we'd expect from a manager of a football club. So it became very, very difficult. And I think a lot of the stuff on reflection, when you look at it now, and probably the things that will come out over the next couple of weeks and months, as we all know, with the shambles that is the club in terms of decision making, we'll look back on some of those interviews and go, did he actually mean that? What was he trying to say here? You know, how is he kind of coming across? And there is an element of sympathy for him, but we've got to be careful as a fan base here, because we've wanted him out for a long time, and we can't then turn around and go, I feel really sorry for him now. Like it's just the way that football works, and no one goes into football rightly or wrongly for an easy ride, and you know, everyone in football has to be accountable, because the club is effectively at the mercy of the supporters, and you know, supporters want, say, necessarily deserve, but they want answers and they want transparency in terms of how the club is being run and the decision making. So you know, the fact remains that we've got a manager in charge until hopefully the end of the season. I'm hoping they're not going to go, right, he's gone in a couple of weeks, we'll get someone else in. I hope it just, you know, come what may, we just stick with Paul and Michael, whatever they do, and go from there. But it became very strained, and it's not, you know, it's not how I would want to see the football club being run. And I'm sure many others wouldn't either, because it just doesn't look good. And, you know, if you've got managers being treated like that at the end of the contract, and the same with Liam Moore, to some extent, players aren't going to be queuing up to come to us because they know the kind of treatment they're going to be receiving. So it became very difficult, and there really was only one option for him and for the club moving forward.
A final word then on Gorka Panic before we move on to what's to come next. Just to reel off some stats for you. Gorka Panic is the second longest tenure as a Reading manager since relegation from the Premier League in 2013. He clocked up 83 games in total, and that includes games where his first game, where he obviously was in quarantine for the Colchester game, and for a couple of games this season, when Marko Mitrovic was in the dugout when Panic had COVID. It was 83 games for Gorka Panic, a points per game record of 1.31 in the league. That puts him as the fourth best manager since relegation. So this is out of eight managers. So about average for Gorka Panic. Nigel Atkins, Jaap Stam and Mark Byrne all have better points per game than him. He has the fifth best win percentage. So Steve Clarke overtakes him on that purely because of the FA Cup run. And then if you look at the points won in the final 10 games, Gorka Panic does come bottom of that, just 5 points won from Gorka Panic's final 10 games. He's been a manager, obviously massively helped by the 3 points won yesterday, but definitely given more of a stay of execution than a lot of his predecessors before him. Benji, just to sort of to round up on Panic, how do you think Panic will be remembered as Reading manager? I think for me, I think time will be a massive healer for him, because things are obviously very, very raw at the moment. And the way things have ended, obviously, yesterday's win aside, the way things have ended have been, you know, how nobody would have wanted it to go. And sort of the anger and the toxicity around the fan base has been horrible, really. But in general, he's, for me, I think, been dealt probably the toughest hand any Reading manager, certainly in the modern era, has been given. He's managed in a pandemic. He's had a transfer embargo. He's had the 6-point deduction, which was for things that happened before he even came to the club. How do you think Panic in time will be sort of remembered and sort of looked back on as a Reading manager?
Yeah, it's a good question, and obviously I think it's been made a lot more difficult by the last 6 weeks or so, because had he left after Kidderminster, after Fulham, you know, obviously people would have felt, okay, this is justified, but at least people would have gone, he's left at the right time, he's left when he needed to go, and there were good parts of his tenure as well. Instead, he's had this really long, horrible exit process of terrible result after terrible result, growing toxicity after growing toxicity, and that, I think, has sort of ruined his, I guess, immediate reputation. I do hope he gets remembered as kind of, I think, what he feels he was, which was someone who at all times gave his best and cared a lot about what he was doing. And I have absolutely no reason to doubt that that is true, because having dealt with him, I 100% believe that he is that person, a person who's going to at all times give his best, and someone who genuinely does and still does care about Reading Football Club. I mean, even in his presser last night after he'd already left, I really felt the emotion that he cares for the club, and I hope he gets remembered as someone who tried their best in incredibly difficult circumstances. Of course, as we all know, that's not enough in football. You need to get concrete results as well, and he couldn't do that, and for that reason he shouldn't be at the club anymore. It's totally fair that his job is not there. I mean, whether the Paul Lintz, Michael Jilks team will end up being better is obviously a totally different question, but He should be out of the job. That's just a fact, I think, that we can all kind of agree upon. But I do hope he's remembered as someone who really did give his absolute everything in an incredibly difficult set of circumstances.
Yeah, let's move on then to what happens next. And if you scroll to the bottom of that club statement yesterday, which I know a lot of people didn't, I think the headline was that Gorka Panic had been sacked, and then buried right at the bottom is this statement that former England captain and son of current Royals player Tom Paul Lintz is going to be taking interim charge along with academy manager Michael Jilks. I think it was sort of one bombshell after another that half an hour after the final whistle, Vuka Panovic goes. And I think probably most people imagined, and it was reported last week, that if Pana did go, it would be Michael Jilks taking over. And obviously that is half right. But he is going to be joined by Paul Ince, who has not managed since leaving Blackpool in 2014. There's certainly been some mixed reaction on this. Ben, what was your immediate sort of thought when you found out that it'd be Paul Ince alongside Jilks in the dugout on Tuesday night?
Well, I just couldn't believe that the club used the dugout seat instead of the flag or the stadium, to be honest. It blew my mind, really. And then obviously the news about Paul Ince. I mean, they've really pulled it out of the bag with crazy ideas there. Look, I mean, we all said we wanted a new manager. We got a new manager. I think it would be really harsh to kind of jump on him and go, well, I want a new manager, but not that one, you know. The link is tenuous, I guess. I'm not going to say any more than that because I can't prove anything in terms of the links behind the scenes. It does seem on paper a bit of an odd choice because there was no rumours, and Benji will fill us in on this, but normally when you get a bit of a rumour, there's some truth in it, at least. Paul Ince wasn't mentioned. I'm not even sure he's been mentioned for other jobs over the last few years. I don't think his name's come up, really. From what I understood, he was just kind of doing a bit of punditry here and there. Look, I mean, I have no problems with him coming in. It's a good opportunity for him in the same way that it was a good opportunity for Andy Carroll to come in and kind of do something with us, really. So, you know, having Michael Gilks there kind of eliminates that. Let's just see what we do for, you know, two or three games and see how the squad beds in. You know, Michael's been around it, gave a fantastic interview a couple of weeks ago. Club legend, don't use that term lightly, but he is, you know, he's one of my first heroes watching the club at Elm Park. So I'm more than happy for those guys to crack on this season. I just think it needs to be now that the fans continue to get behind the team on the pitch. You know, and making sure we get those 3 points on Tuesday moving forward. My only concern is that, and this would be with anyone coming in, is that we've got an interim manager that we're told is going to last until the end of the season. We've got the bulk of the squad out of contract anyway. So normally when you get a new manager bounce, you've got a core of players that want to impress the new manager and go, okay, we want to get a new contract here. I would be surprised if a lot of those players are already looking at other deals to go somewhere else because of such the circus of Reading Football Club at the moment. So that would be my only concern, that we might not see, you know, the new manager bounce that we typically see at other clubs when they get new managers in. That would be my only point there. But look, you know, he's going to come in. He's not even given his first interview yet. So let's see what he says in that, see what kind of team he picks. Whether or not he picks Tom is another thing altogether. You know, there's no reason that he shouldn't, because as we said on the podcast on Thursday, he's been very good over the last couple of games. So, yeah, we just hope that it has some effect on the playing squad. He can use that performance yesterday and go, look, you can play when you want to. This is what we need to do. This is what we need to tighten up on and go from there. But yeah, look, I mean, getting on his back straight away, I don't think is really going to help anybody. You know, I think the pressure needs to stay on the board and what they're doing, and that rightly should continue. But in terms of Paul Ince, let's just give him a chance and let him get in first before we start criticising what he's done and what he hasn't done. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks, but you know how many times have we said that with the club over this season, really?
Yeah, if you Google Paul Ince manager, a lot of it comes up is him criticising Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and Ralf Rangnick at Man United, which tells you how long he's been out of the game. And I was doing a bit of research this morning. I think he interviewed for the England under 21 job a couple of years ago. He's been linked with a couple of lower league jobs, but in general, as you say, Ben, mostly been doing punditry. As we said, we don't want to jump up Paul Ince's back straight away. I did want to read out a quote we got from a Blackpool fan this morning, which isn't particularly glowing. I thought I would read it out. He says, he's remembered as one of the worst managers in our history. Tom Ince has done more for his dad's managerial career by bagging him two jobs than he has achieved in the last few years of his own career. Neither of them will get a good reception on Saturday. Obviously, Reading travel to Blackpool next weekend, which will certainly be an interesting one indeed. Benji, do you have any idea sort of where this decision came from to bring Paul Ince in? There's obviously, as with anything with Reading at the moment, there are murmurings about certain advisors being involved, and we certainly don't want to jump to any conclusions on that basis until there is any sort of concrete info. And it is difficult to get concrete info on quite how much influence Kia Drabkian does. Do you have any sort of idea when this decision was made to bring Paul Ince in, why I think obviously a lot of people would have been happy with just Michael Jilks as interim manager. Why both of them together?
Yeah, no, it's a tough situation because firstly, I want to say that I really do sort of echo what Ben was saying. And I think it's a really important point, which is that, you know, the manager change has happened, the manager change that everyone sort of was asking for, not necessarily in terms of the new manager coming in, but the other manager leaving. And everything absolutely now has to be put, all the energy has to put into making sure the team stays up. And that means backing the new manager and backing the team and obviously giving Paul Ince a chance. And it would be unfair to criticize him too harshly before he even gets a chance to manage one game. But I do have to say that I feel incredibly uncomfortable with sort of how this was done, the process of him being appointed and the fact that he was appointed at all. I mean, when looking at sort of every aspect of it, firstly, I've never really seen a manager come in from the outside with no real connection to the club and be appointed as interim manager while they search for a new manager, which is what was said in the statement. So that immediately is alarm bells are ringing in my head, because surely he was already the product of the search that was underway and had led to Paul Ince. Secondly, I've never seen a new manager from the outside announced at the bottom of another statement saying that the manager has been left without its own sort of statement that should have been on the website. So that immediately is incredibly bizarre to me. Why are you trying to sort of sneak this in when it's something that everyone is going to see eventually? You should be sort of highlighting this as something, as a decision that's been made, rather than as this sneaky little side decision that's been made. Thirdly, I feel incredibly uncomfortable by it, because while I don't think I'll be able to find concrete proof, because the reality is it probably doesn't exist, everyone that I've talked to last night and this morning says the same, which is that it was Kia Jurabchins at least supported him, or just his entirely his choice. And obviously that's going to be not great. Fourthly, I feel uncomfortable about it because he hasn't managed since 2014. And while I want to give him a chance, it seems kind of just insane to bring in someone for an incredibly tough job that hasn't managed in 8 years. And I mean, ultimately, that all leads me to feel really quite bothered by the appointment and how it's done. I mean, it leads me to kind of, this isn't something that I know for a 100% fact, but I don't think it's a coincidence that pretty much every manager that's come in over the last 4 or 5 years, probably other than kind of Jaap Stam, is either someone who has direct links to Kia or someone who doesn't have the managerial track record to really take on full autonomy. You know, Paul Ince hasn't been able to get a job, and he has applied for jobs. He hasn't been able to get a job since 2014. He's desperate. He wants to be back in the limelight. He's someone that Kia can, I'm not going to say control, but he's someone that will not be able to sort of take on the kind of full power that some managers at other clubs have. You know, whether he'll let it happen or whether it'll just happen, Kia will be able to make a lot of the big decisions because Paul Ince isn't in a position to kind of take on that kind of power. Paunovic, I think, was a fantastic person. He didn't have the CV for this job. And once again, he came along through Kia. Kia will have the power in that relationship to make a lot of decisions on his own. And this is the nature of why Reading, I think, are constantly getting these managers who are bizarre left field choices and aren't really qualified, is because they have to agree to work with Kia, and B, they have to agree to kind of leave a lot of the power to Kia. And I think that's what makes me feel so sort of uncomfortable about this. But I do want to say, I don't want to judge Paul Ince before he's managed a game. I hope it works out fantastically well. I hope he wins every single game for the rest of the season. And, you know, maybe he can. He does have a great playing career. It's just, it's hard for me not to feel that there's a lot of alarm bells when this kind of decision is made, and the manner of how the decision is made is seen.
Yeah, I think that's totally normal. And my mind just goes back to when Veljko Paunovic was announced in, 18 months ago, and they didn't even acknowledge that Mark Byrne had gone, which tells you anything about the way the club handled communication around managers. You mentioned there, Benji, that obviously the statement said that him and Jilks are interim coaches until a new manager is found. Do you get the sense that it's possibly a chance for Paul Ince to audition for the role, certainly until the end of the season? If, say, Reading go and beat Birmingham on Tuesday, they go and beat Blackpool on Saturday, could, you know, there's been no sort of concrete statement of saying he's here till the end of the season. But do you think it could be a case, we've seen it the likes of Cardiff this season, where Steve Morrison wins a couple of games and they put him in charge till the end of the season? Could it be a case where this is Paul Ince's audition, essentially, the next couple of weeks, and he could then be in charge till the end of the season?
I mean, I think, to be honest, that every interim manager who takes charge has that opportunity. I mean, we've seen tons and tons of times that an interim manager will come in, win a few games, and things will snowball from there, and they'll end up taking the role permanently, or at least for the rest of the season. I don't totally feel that this is the same situation, because if I'm being totally honest, I would fully expect Paul Ince to be in charge for the rest of the season, kind of regardless of the results. I think unless things totally nosedive and it just completely ends up being a disaster, I think Paul Ince will be the manager in charge for the rest of the season, because I don't think you really search for the outside on the outside for an interim manager to bring him in for like a week or two. That is just such a bizarre concept to me. And secondly, I think if Kia has chosen his man, I think that'll be more than just 1 or 2 weeks. I think that'll be at least for the rest of the season. I would not be remotely surprised to see Paul Ince as manager for next season, kind of regardless of results. But I personally, and this is based on just sort of a hunch on what we've heard over the last 18 hours or whatever it's been, it's still very fresh, but I would expect him to be in charge for the rest of the season.
Let's move on to a bit more positivity then to end on with another appointment. Actually, you can tell this is live because there has been another appointment in the last half an hour. Noel Hunt, promotion winner in 2011-12, is back at the club as under-23 manager. I've only just read it briefly, but I think that's his role. He's taken training at Bearwood Park this morning. Obviously, a little bit of coaching background for Noel Hunt. I think he was at Swindon for a bit, possibly. But Ben, how important is it to get these characters back in the football club? And we've got someone like Michael Gilkes now, who, as you say, is a club legend. I think he's made the fourth most appearances for the football club, obviously a similar cup winner as well, got a really close association to the football club. Obviously, things are still going to be going on in the background. There's still issues at boardroom level, and there's still Kia Jurabkin lingering around like a bad smell. But these appointments being made, Noel Hunt coming back to the football club, Michael Gilkes taking more prominence, is this potentially a step in the right direction?
Oh, for sure. 100%. I mean, you know, you can't... I go back to the star meeting that we had, you know, 4 weeks ago now, and a lot of the clamour was about getting, you know, previous players or previous managers back. And to some extent, that does work because, you know, you're looking for people who did the absolute best that they could in their roles to come back and to kind of feed that back to the club, really. You know, with all due respect, you're not going to get Royston Drenthe back because he, you know, although he was a complete maverick, he didn't really, you know, it doesn't have the same affection from Reading fans. But someone like Noel Hunt, who, you know, wasn't with us for ages, but when he did, you knew you were going to get 100% from him. And he was a character, and he cared, and he wanted to do the best that he could. Now, he's obviously been working in the background and doing things. I think he was at Swindon for a little while in terms of their coaching capacity. But I would imagine, my guess would be that this has been going on for a few weeks, because obviously Ali left before Christmas, didn't he, to join Arsenal, and the void has been there for a while. And I think it's even more important now that you know, with Gilkes stepping up to the first team, that someone is there coaching those players in the under-23s who may well play quite a prominent role for the first team next year. So if you can get someone like Nolan, as we have done, I don't see that as anything other than a positive, really. And I'd like to see him, you know, kind of face up a little bit more than maybe previous people have, given a bit more opportunity on the mic in terms of doing some media stuff, because, you know, Reading fans love him. I've not met a Reading fan that's ever criticised Noel Hunt personally. And he's someone who's going to come back in and instill that quality in those young players that we want to see. And although we've had some under-23 step up this year, it's not been anywhere near the kind of the quality and the consistency that we've maybe seen in previous years. You know, the great work that the late great Eamon Dolan did and building that up. And you know, Noel was what we gathered was very, very close to him. So there'll be some qualities there that he can instill in the academy and to those players that need direction, and they need to be prepped for the first team, because that's the whole point of an under-23 squad. So, you know, these are positive steps to be making, you know, regardless of what happens with the first team. If you're building the blocks and the foundations, the club can begin to move forward and progress. And I hope it works out for him. You know, the under-23 job is a job that doesn't, I say, carry scrutiny, but the pressure is a little bit less because it just kind of ticks on in the background. But having someone like him back, you know, to kind of continue to learn with you know, again, what I've seen from the U23 is a good group of players. They just need some direction. They just need some kind of cohesion in the unit, really. And I think he can bring that for us and move that forward.
Yeah, I mean, it's an incredibly young set of 23s this well. It has been for the last couple of seasons because obviously the club have made this decision to, well, make choices on players at early stages. So they're making decisions on players at the age of sort of 19, 20 as opposed to 21, 22. And obviously because of the squad depth and things like that, players are being called up to the academy much earlier in their development than they usually would be. You know, Jamari Clark was an under-18 player last season and he's been called upon a couple of times this season. And Mamadi Kamara only turned 18, I think, on New Year's Eve. So, yeah, I think it's important to acknowledge that there are still obviously issues going on at the football club. And I think that's what I was keen to stress after the win yesterday, that, yes, there's still a lot going on in the background, but ultimately you have to sort of celebrate these little wins along the way. And hopefully there is, you know, more positive steps to come. And I think I probably speak on behalf of everybody that there are obviously concerns about Paul Ince, but we want nothing more than him to go and win a couple of games and to get run into safety. And that is ultimately, as Dai Young, that letter was wishy-washy last week, but the stated aim was to stay up. And ultimately, if Paul Ince or Michael Jilks or whoever it is can keep running in the division, I think that's got to be the positive. So, that is a nice end to note. Nice note to end on there. I nearly got through the whole thing without cocking up, but to just about round up this live stream on the Hovo Kapanović, Paul Ince, Michael Jilks situation. A mad 24 hours, a mad week or so. And I'm sure it's going to get even crazier. There'll probably be some sort of 5-4 game that now on Tuesday against Birmingham just to round off the whole week. But Ben, thank you very much for joining me.
Pleasure as always, Ollie, and nice to see you, Benji. Have a good rest of the weekend, and fingers crossed for 3 points on Tuesday.
And thanks, Benji. Cheers, guys. Well, good, thank you very much, everybody, for watching. I'm hoping, I've got no idea how this works, so I'm hoping it should be up as a podcast form as well at some point. But hope you have enjoyed, and come on, you Ars.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Ars.
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.